Hi, patrons, and welcome to the July patron special.
If you're not a patron, then you shouldn't be listening to this. Please
How
turn it
did
off.
You get this? Send us an email, truckaboutshow@gmail.com. I want to know.
Let us know the patron that leaked it. We won't tell anybody that it was you who leaked that information, but we want to know.
Oh, no, I'm going to kill them.
We know where they're going to kill them, but that we're just still going to keep it anonymous.
Oh, okay. So this month, we are doing one of Richard's ideas.
I have ideas.
Yeah, he does have ideas, and they're pretty good ones sometimes. We're going to be talking about three characters. We're going to go back to an idea that we did a few months ago with Loic on Troy. And if you have not listened to that patron special, you should, because I think it's pretty good. And this month, we're going to discuss kind of the three characters in the three main Star Trek series that we have covered on Trek About so far, the original series, The Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine. We're going to talk about three of the characters that are using their kind of vehicle for looking at humanity. So we're going to talk about Spock, Data, and Odo.
Yeah, the three characters remind me of each other a lot in that, less so with Spock, but certainly with Data and also with Odo, questioning what personhood is in a lot of ways. These are people who are outside of and supposed to represent someone different than the usual. Obviously, in the original series, an alien was that first kind of step. It's funny that, simply having an alien crew member was seen as progressive, but there you go. It was the 60s.
We had just made first contact with aliens in 1959, so...
Yeah. Listen, they were called Russians, and it was...
Well, I think that, one of the ways I think that it's instructive to talk about these characters is to kind of talk about, Spock first, because, of course, Spock was a mirror into some sort of, Spock was a mirror into looking at humanity and looking at the way that humanity interacts with itself and with other people and other races and kind of the traits of humanity and those kind of things. And that was really constructed as, as we know, Spock is half human and half Vulcan. He very much decided to go with his Vulcan side, suppressed his human side. I watched Journey to Babel, one of the episodes I watched in preparation for recording this. And, that's a really interesting episode for looking at Spock because, of course, you get to see his father and his mother and see where he came from. And you see that one scene where he's talking to his mother, Amanda, and she says, you're half human. You can smile. And of course, we've seen Spock smile as well back in, I forget what episode it was, maybe The Man Trap or something.
There is one in The Cage.
The
Cage where he smiles at the flower or something like that. And of course, there was the bit in This Side of Paradise when he smiles, and that's supposed to be a very almost weird moment because it's certainly, he's not naturally smiling.
Right.
It's spores or whatever.
Right. And so that's what I think is, Spock was an interesting character for a lot of different reasons, and he was kind of the breakout character of the show.
Oh, yeah.
But frankly, if you look at sort of the period and kind of the fan mail they were getting and magazine covers and appearances and all kinds of stuff. William Shatner as Kirk was popular too, but Spock was definitely almost seen as kind of a heartthrob, which was, interesting. And I don't think anyone really saw that happening. But he is a character that was very... I think in the original series, he's portrayed a little differently than he is in the movies because, of course, he's a lot more dismissive of humans and McCoy in particular, I think, than he is in the movies. And, when they started developing the Next Generation, I think they wanted to continue that examination of humanity, but do it in a very different way, which is why they came up with this character of Data, an android who wants to be human.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, another of the episodes that I watched in preparation for this was Data's Day, which features a... Romulan who's pretending to be a Vulcan, and Data has that immortal line about he's much closer to being Vulcan, but he finds their philosophy stark or something like that, which is kind of a nice contrast to the ways that he's obviously a homage or a different version of the Spock character.
Yes.
But it's obviously he doesn't want to be what Spock wanted to be.
Yes. And I mean, both of them have it's interesting to see Spock almost as evolving by the period of the movies where in the series he is much younger and, at that point where he's very much kind of, he reminds me of somebody whose, parents maybe were from a different country and, they've very much, assimilated, Americanized, but somebody who wants to connect very hard with their original heritage. That is kind of where Spock is. He's
I mean, even though he was raised on Vulcan.
And it's interesting how in some ways Worf is kind of another twist
Worf,
on that character who is not raised on Vulcan, but is not raised on Klingonos, but is trying to be very Klingon. It's not that Spock feels very uncomfortable with his human side, which is usually explained as emotions in a way. Vulcan is the very logical, and the humanity is the passion. And Spock is very disdainful of the human side. It's almost as if he finds it gauche or messy or déclassé kind of a way, which is certainly given to talk about Vulcan history a little bit. Oh God, I can't believe I'm saying that phrase. But my understanding of it is that essentially
you forgot to push your glasses up and snort. By the way,
my understanding is that Vulcans originally were a fairly violent and warlike people, and then some figure that I'm supposed to know,
Sarak,
comes up with the idea of Lot. He's their Kaelas figure, and instead of for the Klingons, they find themselves in passionate battle, and, he defines the warrior codes, Kaelas does, but Sarak defines the kind of logic codes of them. And from then, because one of the things that I love is that they make it very clear that Vulcans do have extraordinarily strong emotions, except they just need to be placed into check. On our episode about the Klingons, we talked a lot about that. The Vulcans and Klingons are very similar, and so certainly you can see why Spock would be ashamed of the human side of himself. He's almost ashamed of the human side of himself, like we might be ashamed of some of the shit we did as teenagers.
Well, it's weird because I wonder, one of the things that's kind of threaded throughout Star Trek is this idea that yes, Vulcans actually do have emotions and do experience emotions, but they are, meditating all the time. They are very, very, stoic. They have a different kind of control over their psyche than humans do. This is a discipline that they have to practice throughout their entire life. We'll see in Star Trek Voyager, which is the next show that we're going to do after Deep Space Nine, has a main character who's a Vulcan, and we see him meditating a lot.
It's Tuvok, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So the show does go into that a little more about what Vulcans actually need to do to sort of center themselves and to control their emotions. And, to me, it's an interesting question because I look at Spock and I say, well, here's a character who is half Vulcan and half human. So he's obviously rejected all of his, human side. He doesn't want anything to do with it. But he does have these Vulcan emotions. But then, of course, he's also got these human emotions. How do they combine? And in what sort of ways do they combine? I don't know what the answer to that is, but I think it's kind of a missing piece of the puzzle in a way.
At the same, part of the suggestion is the fact that he is in this bond, does have this extraordinarily strong bond with Kirk. His dying words, in Wrath of Khan, I was and always will be your friend. That's coming from a Vulcan. That's an extraordinarily extraordinary shower of love, and maybe it is the human side of Spock that is able to form that connection with Kirk, and to a lesser degree with McCoy.
I don't know, because I think that one of the things that I think is really, again, with Journey to Babel, for example,
yes,
where they develop sort of a little bit more, obviously they wanted to develop the Vulcan culture and the Vulcan sort of society a little bit. And you see that in Amok Time, you see that in Journey to Babel, you see that in a couple other episodes. But what I find interesting about that episode in particular is if you look at how, DC Fontana wrote that episode and how she wanted to sort of portray how Vulcans would express affection. And, the way that Sarek and his wife express affection is by this very little two-finger touch. It's not anything showy. It's certainly not anything that anybody would even really notice or but it's something that it's almost like the Vulcans are sort of deigning to do it. I don't even know if Vulcans themselves do that.
But I do remember that episode. It is very cute how they do that. And what I love about that episode, to maybe take this a little further afield, is Amanda's reaction to that, because at this point She recognizes that having a two-finger touch is the Vulcan equivalent of sweeping her up in his arms and giving her a passionate kiss, and she takes it in the spirit that it's given.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and also, I mean, the thing is, too, to kind of contrast Spock with Data a little bit is,
yeah.
You know, Data is a character that doesn't have emotions.
Well,
and never has emotions. We're not talking about the emotion ship. That is the thing we don't mention. But
again, I guess the idea of emotions running through the three characters, because, again, as we have said a lot in our TNG coverage, maybe he doesn't feel emotions in the sense of, you know, he's angry and he's getting red hot, or, you know, he's sees a friend and he is, you know, feeling glowing inside. You know, he's maybe not doing those things.
He doesn't have the physiological responses of emotions.
But at the same time, Data cares for his friends very much. He has ideals of loyalty, his desire to create. I mean, these are all again, my theory is that, you know, Data is the equivalent of a person who just doesn't show really their emotions, is usually very flat, is still feeling things, but has been told his whole life, you don't have emotions, this isn't a thing you can do. And so just, again, I see Data as having internalized certain things.
Yeah, and also, you know, I agree with you, and I mean, you know, obviously if you've listened to us discuss, you know, TNG for the year and a half or so that we did it, you know, we definitely did come down on the side of Data has emotions, which is, you know, why it was so sad that I had to keep back the fact of this emotion chip for so long, you know, because I was kind of like, oh, yeah,
that feels
I agree
like,
with you, but it is coming, and I know it's coming, and
up until the emotion chip is mentioned, like, there is a degree to which in the story of Data, I kind of... The rest is fanfic to me once the emotion chip is introduced.
Yeah, but here, you know, well, to a large degree, I think you can completely ignore the TNG movies. Mm. But I think that, well, look at this from another way or another point of connection between Spock and Data. And, you know, I don't know if any of this was really planned, but I think there's a lot of resonances between the two characters. You know, less so with Odo, and we'll get to Odo, but because Odo is doing, you know, they're doing a very different thing with Odo. But, you know... Spock's Vulcan-ness and Spock's sort of heritage and his philosophy of life and all of these things and his lack of emotion and control came from his father.
Yeah.
And Data's emotions came from his father because he created the emotion chip.
And Odo certainly has a fraught relationship with Dr. What's-His-Name.
Mora.
Which, you know, is explicitly considered, you know...
Interestingly enough...
The show considers them father and son, yeah.
The character that... is this kind of analog on Voyager kind of has a fraught relationship with his quote unquote father.
Yeah. Again, we've joked about daddy issues, and certainly a lot, you know, for example, Riker and Picard certainly have daddy issues too. So
it's very possible that Gene Roddenberry had daddy issues.
And Gene Roddenberry liked being daddy to a lot of women, but that's a different story.
That's a different podcast.
But then, you know, Odo feels a lot of emotions, but I think Odo is so – it's – Odo very much is ashamed of a lot of the things that he feels. He does – a lot of it is, you know, talk about contemptuous of humanity, of being solid is the term that
He's not even contemptuous of humanity. I mean, he's contemptuous of all humanoid life, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Which to be fair, in the show, each series broadens the definition of a person. Since in the real world, we are really the only other sapient beings that, you know, we consider are other humans. You know, Spock is intended to be human, just as Data is human in a way. Odo is very contemptuous of that, and
well, and it also, I mean, not to cut you off, but it also does fit in with the aims of Deep Space Nine, which is
is
to have main characters and even recurring characters that are not human and have their stories and kind of develop their cultures.
And even not Federation.
And not Federation as well, yeah, certainly.
So I'm thinking about things like Odo's feelings for Kira throughout the series. He doesn't tell anybody, or he because he feels it's very unseemly. Odo is very much a person who doesn't show his emotions, not because necessarily he finds them shameful or because they represent something he doesn't like, but because he is terrified he will be rejected.
Yeah.
And which kind of makes I mean, Spock doesn't seem to really care whether or not he's rejected, because Spock is an extraordinarily confident person in a lot of ways. You know, Spock is very comfortable where he is, and he, you know, he takes control, and he, if he's in a situation where everyone's acting strange, he's going to be able to be like, I don't know what's wrong with all of them. You know?
Sure.
And it comes very naturally to him.
Or does it?
I don't know. Well, that is a question, of course. But at the same time, I don't think he has as much angst as Odo does about fitting in and finding his place in the world, because Spock has kind of found his place in the world.
Well,
because
of course, you know, the other thing too is that is, you know, that that is kind of an interesting connection between Data and Odo, and not Spock, is that, yeah, Spock is a, if he's not unique for being half human, half Vulcan, he's very rare. And he does have a place. He has chosen Vulcan culture. He has chosen Vulcan society and the Vulcan way of life. Whereas Data and Odo, well, you know, of course, we learn later on that Data has a brother and that Odo is part of the whole founder thing. But at the beginning, they are the only one of their kind.
Yeah.
And they react to that in very different ways, which I think speaks to their very different personalities, of course.
Yeah. At the same what I think is interesting about Data is Data doesn't seem to – I mean, Data certainly has found his place on the Enterprise. He is in a particularly special environment. But at the same time, he – and we slowly do see him fighting for more and more dignity as he goes around.
Well, let's not forget that in Data's day, you know, he is – I mean, you know, we could talk about The Measure of a Man, for example. But,
yes.
You know, the character of I forget the guy's name, but the guy who was coming to him and saying, we want to – disassemble you, you know, in Data's day, 2 years later, he's writing him a letter.
Yes.
They're like pen pals.
Well, I remember where Measure of a Man ends with
Maddox.
It's certainly Data doesn't feel that the experiment is valueless, or that, you know, he is willing to go through this risk for, you know, if it will help other people. But most of the reason Data is protesting this particular experiment is because he doesn't feel that it's safe enough. And he certainly says, you know, if you come back with some more designs and I think they're better, you know, I would consent to doing this. So obviously, you know, I like that there is this behind the scenes where they have kept that up, in which, you know, Maddox is able to grow and change and realize that he was wrong in the way that he approached Data initially. And
you know, the other thing too is if you think about the way in which Data reacts to that, and honestly the way that Data reacts to a lot of stuff throughout the 7-year run of the original of the Next Generation.
I remember the one where he's captaining the ship.
Yeah.
And which episode was that?
I don't remember, but yeah. But I think that, you know, if you look at it and you say, you know, again, if he does have emotions, and I think we both agree that he does even before the emotion chip, in a way, Data represents almost a synthesis of the Vulcan logic and human emotion.
Yeah.
You know, because of course he's not I mean, part of, you know, you could sort of, I'm sure that people have written long explanations about why Vulcan emotions are so much more powerful than humans. You know, maybe they have much stronger physiological reactions or whatever, but, and the, you know, you, it feels good to be angry. I don't know, but it's almost as though Data is, you know, he doesn't have the physiological responses to emotions, but he does feel at least some of the higher emotions, quote unquote. And so you could even say that in a way Data is not better than a Vulcan, but has sort of, you know, been truer to himself. Mm. Because one of the things about Spock and about Vulcans in general is that, you know, they're not really being true to who they are. You know, they are, you know, adopting this very ascetic way of life that is, I'm sure it has value, and I'm sure it has its you know, pleasures, but they are denying a very, you know, important and big part of their psyche and their body and their selves. And Data isn't doing that. Data is always open to new experiences in a way that I don't think Vulcans are, and also, frankly, in a way that I don't think Odo is.
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, the Vulcans kind of do represent an extreme view of certain ways of, you know, human behaviors, and frankly, certain things that I think are good for society. For example, you know, if in general, you know, people as they grow older, you know, will realize there are certain emotions that are inappropriate for this time. You know, it's not appropriate, for example, to burst into tears in the middle of work, or to, you know, scream.
It's not.
Yeah, or to scream at your friend for no reason. You
it's
know,
not.
Because, yeah, I we have to have some.
How dare you?
We should have a conversation about this later. But of course, you know, it isn't even a degree of public versus private. Again, we see when Sarek and Amanda are alone, they're doing the two finger touch, for example. That's just
Let's be very clear about what exactly it is they're doing, because that sounded very dirty.
Well, that is the Vulcan equivalent of sex.
You saw Muck Time. It's not.
That's true.
Their version of sex is fighting with large sticks.
Oh God! So Sarek and Amanda Ponfard. At least once.
I guess they did.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other podcast. We could do a whole podcast on Ponfar.
Okay. Podcast.
There's many Tumblrs devoted to it.
And I guess here's another area in which Odo is, you know, kind of odd out, in that, you know, obviously Spock has a culture that he comes from. And he has a place in that culture. And even though he's mostly among humans and he's serving on a human ship, he does see himself in some ways. Spock, you know, bridges both worlds, and Data is created in the image of a human, and he wants to be human, and he's on a Federation ship, and he's an officer, and he has his place within that culture. But Odo, for the first season or two seasons, doesn't even know where he came from. As far as he knows, he may be the only one of his species.
Yeah.
And so he has no culture to draw from. He has kind of gotten an amalgamation of his personality and his physicality are both amalgamations of everything he's seen and a lot of rejections of all that. Remember, his physical form is largely based on the scientist who raised him, who is a Bajoran.
Yeah, I mean, certainly his hairstyle is. I don't know that I would agree with you that Odo's personality was formed by that. I mean, I think that you know, you sort of get your personality, and certainly your personality changes and stuff, but...
I get what you mean, but some of his personality, for example, is a reaction to the experimentation. Certainly he was molded by the Cardassians. Now he Federation. He's kind of picked and choose.
I think his reactions and his outlook maybe are shaped by that. I think that comes out of his personality.
Yeah, and I guess where I'm leading with that is he didn't get any of his personality from the people who side him.
No.
You know, he goes to the Dominion, and while he does have, you know, certainly he grows to love the Great Link that he experienced that once or twice, and he must have his personality, frankly, was already formed in such a different direction. Again, his personality was formed a lot by identifying with solids, much as he doesn't want to admit that, but his eventual rejection of the Dominion and from the Dominion comes from his fact that he is thrown in his lot with people who are not changelings.
Well, yeah, because I think that, well, there's a couple things there. I think number one, of course, is that Odo doesn't feel much like he has a place. I mean, he sort of shaped mostly by Bajorans, but he did have this Cardassian experience for a while,
yeah,
where he was head of security on Tarak Nor. And, you know, it doesn't sound like he really enjoyed that very much,
no,
but he was able to thread the needle, and he was able to walk a very, very tight line and sort of keep the respect of both the Bajorans and the Cardassians. But I don't know that he's necessarily a product of either of their cultures. And then, of course, what you get when the Cardassians leave is the space station being administered by the Federation, but Bajorans are also a very big part of it. So Odo has been kind of, you know, moved around a lot. And,
yeah,
and Deep Space Nine is almost his, you know, if anything else, that's his kind of place. And then I think the other thing about that is that Odo, to me, speaks to, because you can kind of say, well, why does Odo want to reach out to these people? Why does he, you know, he decries humanoids, and he says, oh, I don't understand why you want to do this. I don't understand why you want to do that. And of course, he even becomes one for a little while, or seems to become,
yeah,
one for a little while. But to me, what that really speaks to is kind of the, if you look at the Great Link and you look at Founder and Changeling society and culture and the way that would go, you know, you've got alien creatures that live in a giant ocean that are all intermingling and sharing their thoughts all the time. They are the ultimate social animals, and they're never alone. And so Odo wants to reach out desperately, but because that's what he is. I mean, you know, that's what he's a social creature, but he doesn't know how to do it because fundamentally the way in which the changelings are social is through the Great Link.
I wonder if there is almost some kind of – because you know, certainly with the way the Jem'Hadar react to the founders is, you know, that's genetically almost programmed in. So I wonder if there's something going on that causes a bit of his disdain towards the solids.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, maybe there is some kind of species memory going on with him.
Yeah, it's possible, sure. And so that's another aspect to it. I mean, that's, you know, Odo desperately wants to be social. Odo desperately wants to connect with other minds. He can't do it in the way in which his body and his you know, his psyche want to. So he's, you know, but at the same time, he's got this sort of racial memory, let's say.
Yeah, he's pulled in a dozen different directions at once, really.
Yeah, of being disdainful of solids. And so, you know, he's a very tortured character. I mean, he's got a couple of competing interests that frankly, you know, it's shocking that he's as well
adjusted
as he is.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things that I noticed when I was looking at these three characters is how Odo doesn't have much in the way of outlets. I mean, Spock and Data are both very creative, even though they're both very science-minded. I mean, we see Spock playing instruments throughout the series. We see the Vulcans are very much, you know, talked about as appreciating art and music. And sure, they may prefer geometric patterns and they may prefer art that, you know, mimics the mathematics and the beauty of something, but they are still an extraordinarily aesthetic species.
Sure, yeah.
You have Data who paints and writes poetry and plays instruments, and in many of these
acts,
in many of these ways, that is one of the ways that he's trying to be human. He is kind of throwing himself out there. Well, humans paint, so I'm going to paint, and humans sing, so I'm going to do this. But at the same time, he does seem to enjoy all of that for its own sake. He does love his cat. He does like to paint. He does enjoy writing poetry and reciting it.
And there are things that he tries and doesn't like. I mean, you mentioned singing. You know, he sings like once, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
he does.
Yeah, I do love that scene in Data's Day where he's trying to learn how to dance and just terrible.
But also, and a particularly good scene because the two of them do a great job dancing. But
also, I think you're right. I mean, I think where you were going with that is that Odo doesn't really have any outlets that are not connected to his work. And, you know, interestingly enough, I think that he starts to find those after he, you know, finds the founders and finds the Great Link, and he decides to throw away all the trappings of his former life, get rid of the bucket. You know, the implication is that he puts these, you know, elaborate structures in his quarters to practice shape-shifting. You know, he's kind of, I guess when he's regenerating, he's just sort of oozing around the room.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways in which Odo is, I guess that's his outlet. I guess that's his creative outlet.
No, you're right, actually. Maybe that his creativity is not so much creating something else, but the way that when he's walking with the changeling, when they first go to the Dominion homeworld and they're walking around the plants, and isn't she saying, like, we like to shapeshift into these things, and they talk about how pleasurable and fun it is to turn into weird animals. You know, so I guess that I was completely incorrect. Odo's art is becoming a Turkalian hawk.
Yeah.
Or
whatever.
Yeah, that's true, because other species can only approximate in their creations, but Odo as a changeling actually can become what he wants to create.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that you know, that adds another layer to his journey throughout the show, because of course, you know, when he does become human for a short time, you know, he pretty much throws himself into it with gusto after he kind of has a little bit of a problem with it at the beginning. You know, he's enjoying drinking. Maybe he's drinking too much. I don't know. He's eating. I mean, you know, he's doing all these things that
reading romance novels and assumedly masturbating like fucking crazy.
It is kind of sad that, you know, we record a couple weeks ahead of time, so we're about to do the episode on A Simple Investigation, which you'll hear, you know, in like 3 or 4 weeks. But one of the things that I thought was really sad about that episode is that he never managed to get laid when he was a human. But also, you know, that also makes me think that, you know, one of the sort of missed opportunities, and this is a minor thing, but that I always wished that Deep Space Nine did, was slightly change Odo's face every season to kind of indicate that he was getting a little better at shapeshifting and kind of slowly becoming more and more Rene Auberjonois.
Well, yeah, funny enough, that is something, mentioning Simple Investigation, he does say that, you know, things he does slightly different from time to time. A character mentions, oh, you had a bump in your nose the other day. Yeah, I do make the nose slightly different, but everything's basically the same.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I guess that's a way of covering up any tiny inconsistencies in makeup that might have happened.
I think that's true. There were a couple episodes of TNG that I watched where I don't know if they got better with Worf's makeup or if it was just the HD, but like there's some days where the pancake makeup to cover up the you know forehead ridges was a little off.
I think when his hairstyle changed was when they got a new makeup person who was a little better at it.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, going back to Data for a minute, that's kind of the, you know, at the end of the day, I think that the Data questions, and I think that that's kind of the difference between him and Spock and Odo, because I don't know that Odo really questions. I don't know. I mean, certainly he's very interrogative and he's a detective and these kind of things, but I don't know that he really thinks about, you know, art or what it's like to be a solid or anything like that. I mean, he just sort of seems to go with things and experience things. And Spock knows very much who he is and never questions it. It doesn't seem like.
Yeah.
Whereas Data is constantly in this quest and wondering who he is, what it's like to be human, what he wants to be. You know, think back to the episode, like In Theory, where he tries to date a woman. You know, there's all these things that he is doing that are trying to, you know, I guess he's trying to discover himself.
Yeah.
And you know, Spock and Odo don't really do that, I don't think. I mean, Odo to a certain degree with the shapeshifting and things like that. But, you know, that's much more of a biological determinism than Data's kind of existential quest, I think. Mm.
I guess to a degree it's, again, we only see really Data's experiences on the Enterprise. Certainly people like Maddox don't seem to believe he's human, but nobody on the Enterprise, especially after the events of Measure of a Man, seems like they're making Data feel out of place.
No.
You know, they all, you know, Picard says, you know, Picard and a couple other characters say to the degree, you know, so we're flesh and blood and guts and he's, you know, wires and metal.
Sure.
That at the same time, at the end of the day, where the it's the same basic process, is just done through a different medium, and he has this, you know, Data is as ensouled as anybody else, for lack of it. And they're more confident in Data's personhood than Data himself seems to be. And yet if you go to...
Well, I mean, I think that Data thinks of himself as a person. I just...
And maybe it is people outside. Maybe that is. Maybe Data is lucky enough to be in a place where everyone else around him finds his dignity to be unquestioned. But outside of that, outside of the Enterprise, things aren't quite so nice.
I mean, that's what it really comes down to, I think, is that, you know, at the end of the day, Spock and Odo both have a place where they belong, even if Odo was separated from it, and even if Spock is most of his time is spent, you know, on a Starfleet starship, you know, serving with mostly humans. Whereas Data, you know, yes, he is able to connect with people. He has friendships. He even has romantic relationships. He's expressing himself. He has a rich, you know, social life and a rich sort of, imaginative life. He tries to dream. These kind of things. But essentially and fundamentally, you know, even though we know that lore exists, he is pretty much alone, and he's always alone, and he has no one to ever really talk to about what it's like to be him.
Yeah.
No one else understands. Maybe Lore does, I don't know, but, you know, Lore is crazy, so they don't ever have that discussion. And that, I think, is, you know, I mean, maybe this is a good way to end this conversation, but, like, I think that there's a fundamental sadness to these three characters in a way, and that's not to say that maybe a melancholy is a better word. And,
well, I'm not sure if I find Spock to have melancholy to him.
Well, he is, I mean, especially in the movies, I think he's very much portrayed as, you know, obviously an older version of Spock.
Yes.
And, you know, I think also you see this when Spock appears in TNG in the Unification two-parter, where he's constantly trying these different things. He's trying to reunify, you know, Romulan and Vulcan. Maybe he's the only person who's really interested in that because he's not a full-blooded Vulcan. Who knows? But I do think that there is an element to Spock in the original series and the original series movies where he's very self-confident. He's very assured. He knows who he is. But also, he doesn't have any other Vulcans on the ship. So he is kind of sometimes, I think, a little bit cut off. And, you know, think about a Muck Time, for instance, where he is ashamed of going through that in a way. And he's hiding from it. You know, that is not a logical thing to do.
No, it's true. He did choose to serve on, again, a human ship. If Spock wanted to stay on at a Vulcan Federation ship, he could have still had his same career. But
yeah, they even say in that one episode of the original series that there was a Starfleet ship that was crewed entirely by Vulcans. But you wonder, though,
would he have felt out of place there?
Right. I mean, that's the essential nature of Spock, I think, is that all three of these characters is that they don't ever feel completely at ease anywhere.
I mean, it's really funny. You can imagine let's imagine that Vulcan is a real planet and a Vulcan named Kajin Karadenberry makes a show called Star Trek that's focusing on that Vulcan crew, all Vulcan Federation crew, and Spock's on there and he's the human crewmate.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that may be the case.
I hope that that's real.
I hope that that's real, too.
Well, we could probably talk about this for like another hour, but we should probably wrap this up for this month.
Okay.
We hope you enjoyed this.
Please comment about, you know, your other thoughts on these characters.
Please continue to listen to Trek About, and please continue to give us money. We love it.
And please continue to love us, because we will love you.
Yeah, and give us some feedback on these Patreon episodes if you like them, if you dislike them. Obviously, you don't dislike them because you're still giving us money.
Hey.
Well, thank you for that.
If you have any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover, either a character you'd like to hear us talk about or some other media like a fan movie or something, we've done books, we've done fan films, we've done character episodes, we've relooked at other episodes of Star Trek. If you have any ideas for us, please let us know.
Next month, we're moving into another medium
where no Trek About has gone before.
We are going to be talking about the classic adventure game Star Trek 25th Anniversary.
Ooh.
Which is something that I've actually wanted to play for a very long time and has not been available anywhere for a very long time. And it finally became available, two, three months ago?
Certainly this year.
Yeah. And actually, that is something that people have suggested to us that we do. So we're going
to
do that.
We're listening to you.
Yeah. So, God, I have to play an adventure game.
Yay!
25-year-old adventure game. Oh, God. So I guess I got to start doing that.
I've played it. Well, parts of it.
Just parts of it?
Well, I played the first
chapter. Oh, it's going to be like a reverse Trek About. You're going to know everything, and I'm going to be the
newbie.
Oh, that's fun. All right, well.
But then when we get to the second chapter, I won't know anything.
Okay, fair enough.
Because I died.
Does it have birds in it? Is that why you made that noise?
No.
Oh, I was hoping it had birds in it.
It might have birds in it. I only got to the second chapter.
All right. Well, again, thank you for listening to this. Thank you for donating to us. We really, really do appreciate it. We like doing these patron specials for you. We hope to continue to do them for many, many, many months and years to come. And we will see you next month for another patron special.